Hey guys, welcome to the MC Anime Podcast.
We cover anime, geek culture, Japanese aesthetics, and Asian studies. We are a multi-fandom podcast, and you can expect to hear topics in your favorite hobby or fandom activity potentially. You can find MC Anime on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, please check out mcanimepodcast.com, our website. Furthermore, stay tuned in for another episode.
Welcome to another episode of MCME Podcast. MC here, and I'm back with Leah today. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm good. I'm doing great. It's been a decent weekend. Far too busy, but I didn't nothing on Sunday, so it kind of evened itself out.
True. My day is built just uploading podcasts, getting you to be together, and doing vocal laughing.
Came with the vocal laughing. Because, you know what? For those who don't, I guess, nope. I'm not even getting into it a second time. I can't do it. My brain has let it go. I'm glad to learn that you're now doing vocal lessons. It's learning new things about you every week.
Yeah. But yeah, today's episode is going to be protecting intellectual property and how to protect it. So we wanted to try to do the protections of how intellectual property works. And if you have an idea how that property can be, in the legal sense, given to you as a protection in the law. The four main categories of intellectual property protection is copyright, trademark, trade secret, and patent. The most common one we can discuss right now is copyright. So when you think of copyright, what do you think of?
What do I think of?
Yeah.
Probably the more general use of it, which is just, it's just a form. It's like an official way to, one, state that something that people are seeing, whether it be an image or maybe something for a show, something you'll usually see on logos. Companies typically have these as a disclaimer, but it's that like C in a circle. But it's basically showing that the whatever creation you're looking at or experiencing is owned by someone or is owned by an entity. And they kind of make all decisions about how it's allowed to be used and the distributions of it, all of that. So that's my main thing when I think of the copyright.
And another thing with copyright is it's basically on anything that is given of an intellectual property that has some creative skill, patent, or thing you want to protect in the actual product or idea that is generated. So typically, when you do a file for a copyright, it's usually 50 years after the death of the author or the creator that made that idea or property. That's pretty general. Now, other laws in other countries can be different, but pretty much globally, they recognize 50 years after the death as when something will become non-copyright, but then public domain.
Well, you can still do copyright while the person is alive, as the copyright typically lasts for the lifetime of the person from when you file it. And then there's another 70 years after that where it's still under the possession of that person's estate. So you'll see that, like, a good example is when artists have passed and a good bit of time has gone by. You will see that some of their songs come out from underneath their estate, the copyright taken from it. So you might see it appear in a lot of commercials, in a lot of, like, needs, especially for music. They will put it into a lot of movies, commercials, things like that, or it could be used for games. So same way, if you want to make content and add songs from, like, I don't know, on YouTube or like Instagram, they'll have their own library of copy-free music that you can use because there's no one owning the rights to those.
Yeah, and a lot of times those copyright free or royalty free or non-copyright, with all different names, typically have a creative license in which there is no filed copyright associated with the brand or the intellectual property. So as a result, it's able to be used for people to take and maybe adapt or use to their liking. But that also has restrictions too. Sometimes non-copyright can have like different creative rights licenses, but that's also more law, but copyright that I can get into.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for the most part, when you think of copywriting, it's basically like the official ownership when it comes to anything from music, novels, poetry. You get our software, architecture, and that's why also patents fall underneath it, because if someone has a specific way to make something and they patent it, they still have the copyrights to that. But you can't do it for stuff that's like, whether it be common knowledge, ideas, methods, systems, things that are more theoretical or things that can literally just be taught, for a good bit of those, you can't copyright them. Now, if it's a certain program, you know, like teachable programs or something that's in a book, you might be able to copyright that to an extent, but like teaching someone how to tie their shoes, you can't copyright that. Like the guy who made that up, he would be rich. His family would still be making big bucks. He would be making like war bucks from them, but unfortunately, you can't copyright common knowledge. Same with like speeches for the most part. You can look up a speech. People will know if you copied it for if you're going to use it. But all those kind of like general, less tangible things, they don't have copyrights for them.
Yeah. And, you know, things that are not copyrighted or not able to have copyright. For example, if you're an artist and there's a specific style that you use, that style is not protected. But the individual expression, how you use the style and your skills in that style can be protected. Now, with filming, you also have different angles of shooting, different features in special effects that you can use. The common special effects are not protected, but the software to use the special effects can be protected. Handling, you know, writing a book when you have maybe common phrases or, you know, the horror genre, for example. When you write in that style, it is that genre. And certain things about it, you have to prove. Even music arrangements. When you sing like the C major, that is a melody that is common to play in different instruments. And you use the combination of melodies to create the song.
Yep, which is why stuff like fan art, typically in art, especially online, something that people love to do is showing their original style, maybe for their own characters, and then they will create like 8 iterations of it in other popular show styles. So they might have one that's like a JoJo's Bizarre Adventure style, and then maybe one that's like Billy and Mandy. But they'll switch it up, and now the actual show and the characters from the show, those are copyrighted because there's multiple elements stacked onto there just outside of the drawing stuff. But you're doing fan art of some things, and also you'll see a lot of art people are selling merch or, you know, making something. They might also say like they don't own the rights to the show. This is just a creative like recreation of it, stuff like that. You'll see that a lot in like drawing videos and art creations, just for the fact that you want to put it out there that you're not trying to infringe on a copyright. You're just having some fun with the art style or with the characters from it.
Yeah. And another thing with fan projects to take notice is when you use the reconstructive of that art, it's a derivative work. But a derivative work comes into play is the process in which it's a reproduction. It's not the original, but it's different from the original. But depending on how you use the reconstructed work can be transformative, which goes into fair use. So it just depends on how you use it or how much you change of the original, then there's an argument for fair use, but the fair use we get into later.
Uh-huh.
Just remember that if you have a copyrighted thing that you're using, and whether you use it for personal use or commercial use, you have to appropriate the right license in order to use it. Now, if you're trying to use fair use, which you don't need a license for, they'll have to follow the rule. And also, don't be afraid if you can get a DMCA notice saying that you are copyright infringement. Sometimes that still happens, even if you're using fair use on it, because you're using images or music with that copyrighted idea or property in the work that you do. So just be careful how you go about it. And even if you think you're using fair use, it might be decided in the court that it's not. So be as much punctual in the credits as possible so that you do not own the copyright and it goes to these people. These are the people that own this product, and I'm just using it as a means to an end.
Yes, but if you're, for most people, if you're making any type of content, if you're posting it online, you will usually be within the guidelines of whatever platform you're using. And they have their own built-in, like, who reviews copyright claims and stuff like that. And so they already have a system set up as well. Like, for instance, YouTube, a big thing is when people want to, you know, like, the reaction channels. If they want to, upload a series of TikTok to react to, a lot of times they just take the music out. Because if the music is even playing on a video you're inserting in your own, you could still get copyrighted for that, and it can take down your entire video, even if it's only for 20 seconds. So
yeah,
fair, how each platform, what they consider like fair use and copyright infringement, and you're going to have to make adjustments. But if you're already on the internet, like the same way you'll be listening to this podcast or whatnot, you probably have an idea already, but there's also good videos out there that can probably break it down and make it very clear for wherever you want to upload your stuff.
Now, when you also do reactions to be under the fair use, you want to either change the audio or change the video. But you have to change it in a way that's so different and being used in a totally different way than the original work. So let's say you're watching...
And even then, you still might get caught.
Yeah. Even if you change the entire audio in like it's like deep voice or very low voice and you minimize the visuals, that is still a case for copyright depending on how the court looks at it and how the company looks at it. Because the first thing is the company filing the infringement or the order to take the video down or post down.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at modern day, a good example would be with Twitch, in gaming streaming, there had to be basically laws created and specific coding done for video games to make them be in streaming mode for when gamers wanted to stream them live or play them. Because game companies want to make sure they're getting a piece of the pie in some way, shape, or form. But if they want people to enjoy their game and people also enjoy watching, you know, streaming videos, if you're constantly taking them down, you're just disrupting the whole industry. So they had to find a way where streamers were able to play live or play and upload the gameplay on YouTube without it getting a copyright strike. And that was something that had to come along as the technology developed. But Twitch is a really good one, because the way people's videos would get taken down or channels would get banned for a period of time, and the constant review process can take a while.
But they got better. Companies like YouTube, Facebook, Twitch have got better at which, if you're just doing a walkthrough or playthrough, then typically if you're on the screen doing a live reaction to you playing it, they are less likely to take it down because of the fact that it's free promotional. But then a lot of times they give you, credit, you have to say which game you're playing, all that other stuff, but also you need little disclaimers to support the original people. You know, you have to do all these different steps to like acknowledge the copyright, say who the game was, you know, what company developed the game, which sometimes what platform the game's available on, like Xbox. So you just have to do additional things when you play it.
Yeah, and there's also been this period of time lately that companies would do early releases for influencers and streamers, where they would send them a version, or, you know, like the first few episodes of however long the game is, which they could play a stream for the early release. And that's a promotional thing they did, so that way they didn't copyright it when it was uploaded. And then, of course, once it's available for everybody, they become a little bit more lax. But yeah, it was a whole thing, and it required a lot of back and forth for that to become fair for everybody around.
Yeah, I think the argument is like, well, if I make a video of me playing the game, there's not really doing a copyright infringement on your work, because I'm not using the argument is they're not using the game in a way that was actually infringing. It was more of the transformative nature of how they used it being
more monetary. It was mainly money, because again, if you're doing streaming, for most people, yes, you enjoy video games, But some of these bigger streamers, they're not only getting sponsorships for companies that aren't the gaming, like the gaming company that they're whatever game it's from, but they were also able to stream and make millions of dollars from these games, and none of it was going back to the company directly, or they didn't have a partnership or some type of agreement. So it was, once they realized they were losing money, it became an actual situation. Because, I mean, people were uploading games, but YouTube has changed its copyright rules a lot, and TikTok is more of an anomaly, like how they do their stuff. Every platform is different. Copyright kind of shifts and bends depending on what company you're going through.
Yeah, the reason why TikTok, when you want to, sing a lip sync video on TikTok, you only get 60 seconds of an audio, but they also have that licensing agreement to pay the creators and the distributors of the music that you're using. So they actually have an agreement with big music and sound companies to actually give the copyright holders money and revenue from people using it. And every single time it's used, it's usually what we call royalties. They pay royalties to the copyright claimer, and therefore there's a legal use for that copyright.
Okay. Yeah. But within that realm, when it comes to TikTok, that's its own kind of beast, because people can do edits of shows and include songs from certain artists. So it's like, well, is the original show getting credit? Like, especially if they do like a fan edit of something. And then if someone takes your video, because now you have the option on TikTok where you can not private your video, but make it unshareable. So before you could share it, send it to people, text it to them, like direct message it to them or whatever. But now you can actually turn that feature off so people can't share it on their social media or share it in other places, because people are worried about their name and stuff getting cut out of the video and someone just posting the content.
Yeah.
So, whole other thing.
Pretty much copyright in a nutshell. The next one I want to talk about is trademark. Trademark is kind of interesting because it's a secondary protection than copyright gives, but trademark is a filing that you can keep using as long as you keep using it in your company. Trademarks have a lot of times to do with the logo, the name, different aspects that you could actually trademark. What's your thing about trademarks?
I think they're pretty smart depending on how popular something you create is becoming. So, for instance, the pink sauce lady who popped up on TikTok, and there was all the craziness and controversy. The branding for her company being the pink logo that kind of also looked like the Victoria's Secret lettering for pink, for their line of pink. If you can make it slightly different, you can go ahead and trademark that for your business. And a lot of times it's worth it if you're making money and you have an idea that someone will try to either copy it or use it without talking to you about it, or you saying that it's okay. So I think it's very smart if you have a reason for it. But then also the same with like patents, depending on how much worth it really has for you, sometimes it may not be worth it to do it, especially if you end up changing your stuff down the line, which companies do a lot.
Yep. And trademark are things associated with the company or brand, the intellectual property. It's distinguishable, it's unique to the company or the brand. It's immediately recognized by the brand holder, like the logos, the words they use, signature products, and it keeps going on. Whatever they have that's unique to how they brand themselves, if they use it in advertising, more likely it's going to be a trademark protected image, or it's going to be a trademark of that company.
Yeah, good examples would be the King from Burger King. He's got a very iconic, clear image to him with the beard, the crown, the rosy cheeks and everything. Ronald McDonald for McDonald's. The Apple logo, how it has the bite taken out of it. So, So if anytime you could think of these big companies, the Nike checkmark, or just do it as their slogan, because it's so iconic with that company, of course, that's trademark. And using that, that's normally when you see the knockoff, you see the off-brand stuff from people trying to make slight alterations just so they don't get sued. A lot of times people who end up like getting a letter or whatever would just cease operations, make it slightly different again and start back up. But it's something that's highly identifiable to the company.
True. And also, when you have TV shows, a lot of times if they want to particularly talk about a trademark, they would change the name of that trademark. They'll be able to use it and talk about it without actually paying for the trademark uses in the movie or the TV show, depending on how they do it.
Yes. But I mean, it's one of those things, like, naturally, if you look in the movies that we have here in the States and almost other places, there's sometimes where they just do broad, obvious, like, placement. But a good example of when people just decide to change things rather than just straight up use it, I think the best example I've ever seen is in like animes and mangas, all the different variations of McDonald's.
Yep.
Just the McDonald's. It's like 78 different millions of iterations of McDonald's, similar kind of logo and all of that. But it's just a way so they can feature it without getting in trouble. But of course, I mean, if you're like, if you do a review of stuff, like, there's plenty of like review channels where they just say the company's name. It might show their product or show their logo. And for most part, as long as I think you're not bad mouthing the company in such a way that they would want to do, like, I don't know, say you're liable for something or slander. It's fine.
Well, actually,
it's mainly promotional use.
Talking about a company, it's not actually copyright because it's under freedom of speech.
When they show the logos and stuff from like company. Like if you're watching a video and show someone, like, they're talking about something that happened with Nike and they show the Nike symbol with the Just Do It underneath there, that's fine to use. Like, there's a freedom of use for that. But in some cases, if your video is about a specific company where you are like talking negatively about it, some companies will either try to claim your stuff or they'll try to file some type of lawsuit because you featured their product in their name.
And
that's rare.
Those are things when you fail specifically, like, for example, it can be very strict when it comes to filming. You have to have if you don't want to get in trouble, wear a shirt that has no graphics, because then you're not infringing on anyone's property in the film. So let's say you wear a red shirt, there's no graphics on it. That red shirt is so common that you will not be able, they can't get a copyright strike against you. And that's why a lot of times they make their own clothing. They either get permission to use specific clothing from a brand, or they make their own clothing so that way they don't get docked for the copyright.
I don't know how many times I've seen a new brand of clothing in a show. Unless it's one of those futuristic ones.
It's not really a new brand. They make original clothing. Basically, they have original clothing. A lot of times they have the design market. The design department actually puts all the clothing together for the show or the movie or the commercial. And a lot of times, if they do like a designing for that and do it original, they don't have to use any copyright or permissions from other people to use clothing. But sometimes people want you to use their clothing so they can actually get like advertised too. And that's
those are two different things. Those are different. If we're talking in the realm of framework, yes, you don't want to use logos and stuff. Like, for commercials or movies or TV shows, they probably do buy very nondescript things that if you Google it, it's very hard to find it. Like, for instance, any episode of Supernatural, you will not see a brand name thing on a single one of those people. They're all wearing, like, any random coloring of, like, flannel, a regular t-shirt, jeans, no logos, and then boots. And then, like, a hat that has nothing on it, just like some type of hunter's hat, but they've beaten it up and they've probably taken off the original logo and replaced it with something else. That's also another trick people do. That's how they normally avoid trademark type of issues.
Yeah. And also, if you do like a video blog series, more than likely, you can talk about you having a Subway sandwich, but you can't, like, you can mention it, but you can't go in deep in detail because then you're endorsing the product. And if you do.
People will still do that. That's what the
Mothball channels are for. It is called endorsing product. If you don't have permission to endorse it, you're basically using a brand name in your video. And as a result, you kind of gray. That's a gray area.
Yes, that falls more into free use because, again, you can feature things like the world exists. So if you go outside and you're walking down the street and you pass a McDonald's, McDonald's isn't going to sue you for passing their McDonald's and having it in their video. But yes, if someone's doing a review and it's all of one company's product, a lot of time they'll mainly say a disclaimer beforehand. And then they'll just say, this is my personal opinion of what's going on with these clothes or this outfit or this food. And then they'll talk, which is normally the best way to get out of a trademark strike or a copyright strike or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
True. And another example is Capital One. When they have a slogan, what is in your wallet, that is their advertising niche and what they use in their advertising. You know, it's part of the company business model, and how you go about it is kind of how trademark works.
Yes. It's hard to... I guess if you would say like Flow from Progressive would also be something that's kind of trademark. It's a very iconic, clear mascot for the company. They've used the same actress for years, but also in that regard, is a trademark for it. So those people who are the brand face, that's a part of their contract. So they, like, a lot of times they can't change how they look either if they're under contract to be the face of a company. Which is wild.
Well, also company jingles are also trademarked too. They're often highly used in advertising as a way to distinguish themselves in marketing campaigns. So,
very true.
That's pretty much trademarks understanding. The next one's going to be patents. That's pretty quick. Patents is the process in which you give documents to give protection to inventions, mechanics, product, or service. So these typically are what inventors will use and try to have their idea protected. And a patent usually lasts about 20 years as the average. Sometimes they can be extended depending on how you do it, but it's protected for a certain amount of time where no one else can use that model or method until the patent expires.
Yeah, so if you guys have ever, like, I love Shark Tank. I think it's a lot of fun. I also, in regards to things like copyright and whatnot, the amount of shows that have had a Shark Tank episode, and a lot of times they literally just use the words from the show. Like, when the shark decides they don't want to do something, they'll say, I'm out. But they'll change it a little bit where they'll call it something Shark Tank or whatever. In that show, it is multiple millionaires are sitting at a table. Someone comes in with a business idea, an invention idea, and basically you are trying to do an elevator pitch to the start that they're called to get them to invest in your company. So that way you can start up production, start up sales. But usually at that point, you've already put in some time and work and got some orders out. So you have to let them know your numbers, your projections, all of that. But the number one question that's always asked is, do you have a patent for this? Especially if it's something that's very interesting, something that they're already selling and they've been talking to multiple buyers about. And the reason why patents are important is because if you don't have one, it's very easy for someone else to recreate it or file the patent themselves. If they know how to make your device. Like, say you make a group project with friends, and any one of you can decide that you want to patent it. If whoever does it first and whoever gets their stuff paid and processed first technically owns that idea, which means you're no longer able to create it or sell it to someone else. So if you guys don't really get what patents are, or you still want to see how they work, that's probably the best example. Because basically every episode is just that. They just ask them their margins or numbers and if they have a patent. And then they say no. Most of them still say no. They're like, free five.
And actually, patents throughout history gave inventors, especially, you know, early inventors, because patents have been around since the 1800s and stuff like that. This is before, like, new discoveries were protected. They were actually giving these people a way to protect their idea and actually use it for a specific amount of time in which no one else can use it. And then when it expired, it became, like, public domain and it was accessible to everybody. unless you renewed or got approved for an expansion, expand the expiration date. Now, the thing with patents, it's very historical because you have, like, you know, the invention of the light bulb with the carbon filament with Thomas Edison. The even though he got the patent for the, you know, that light bulb, light bulbs existed way before that. I believe Glenn Bell had it, but however, they weren't able to patent their design because his light bulb was different. And when they got the patent, they beat Thomas Edison, beat the original creator of the light bulb to it, because the patent for the light bulb was a new process for a new idea, a new style in the light bulb. So it was totally able to be patented because it was a new spin on the actual invention.
Yeah.
Anything that you, like, amend or make a change to that is, like, different from the actual patent, from the actual original version, can also be patented as well.
It can, but another thing to keep in mind, patents are pretty expensive to file for. Yes. And it's a multi-step process. It's not the same that, like, this, when you say you're starting a business, you can go ahead and register the name of your business a lot faster and a lot cheaper than you would be able to if it was for, again, a patent for a certain type of process or invention. And you could spend a long time also if someone else decides to argue against you about the legitimacy of your claim to it, where you have to then prove that you were the one who created it. Like, have you seen that show on Hulu? It's called The Dropout.
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah, so the show is Amanda Seinfeld. Basically, it's based off the true story of this woman in Silicon Valley. Her company creates this machine that basically is supposed to take one drop of blood and tell you what type of disease you have. So when you get to the hospital, instead of doing a whole panel of tests, it's just one machine, one test, one drop of blood, done. Which is insane. And we don't have that technology yet. So she created this machine, and her team basically kind of stole the workings of another company's machine that was already in product and out there in hospitals, added some tweaks to it, and then they said, yeah, this is how it is, here's our patent, yada yada. But when they finally got to court, because they got caught, they had to prove that it was that's how the machine worked, where they got their ideas from, which is very hard to do if you actually just copied it from someone else. And if you don't make enough changes to it that it's actually a completely new idea, technically, the courts will rule against you. And you can be heavily fined, sued, all of that.
And then guess what? If you made an advancement to someone else's patent, then they can actually take that and include it in their original patent. They can expand on it.
Yep.
So it really goes to show you throughout history, whether we have software, like, for example, you develop a gaming code. When you're using such gaming code, you use so many different combinations of the code of, like, Python or JavaScript, and actually in that code you create the product in which you're selling, which is the gameplay, which is the character animation, which is the actions, you know, generated by code that really is unique to the design principle. And you have to be careful because people, when they make code, they can use, like, places like GitHub, but GitHub is also it's an open source software, so those protections are licenses, different stuff like that. A patent will actually make, like, Halo franchise, for example, an actual patent on design of the characters and the coding of it. The software
open source is
developed today can actually
open source is fit for you to use.
Yeah. Well, open source has different applications of use. So if it's personal use, there's, like, some creative commons, common use commons, and all this other stuff that you have to be careful with.
Yeah, but I'm saying with open source, it's much more encouraged that you're able to use those rather than you trying to recreate Halo on your own. Because if you do open source, there's been a few games that have done open source, and they allow it to be open for fans to, like, you know, make mods, make adjustments and stuff. And again, you can stream those and play those. You just have to show the credit for it and give acknowledgement to it. But you can recreate Halo. Good luck. Good luck to you. Fly high.
But yeah, that's kind of patents, how they go about it. There's different ways that, you know, to go about it. But patents are pretty self-explanatory. The last thing we're going to talk about is trademarks. I mean, no, not trademarks, trade secret. These are formulas, designs, or IP that has an integral part in value or very crucial to protect. oftentimes is confidential information. It's known to a very select few. It holds a lot of economical value in the process of how the intellectual property works. Basically, a trade secret, you want to think of the Krusty Krab formula. That is vital
to the Krabby Patty formula.
And the Krusty Krab formula is secret because maybe it's not known to the public how it's made, even though it's known to the public from the audience. However, in the show, it's a big secret and nobody knows. That can be a consideration of a trade secret in a limited sense.
And we could still apply it to real world. You have KFC, yeah, where they have their 11 blend of like herb and spices that is used for their secret recipe. And that is a trade secret for that company, where they don't have to publicly advertise what that is. Naturally, maybe if you work there or whatever, you know, that blend might already be sent to the company, or the factory workers might know kind of what it is. But it's not something that is just thrown out there for everyone to be able to find.
Yeah. And another thing with trade secret, it's not easy to replicate. So it only knows to a select few. If it gets copied, the chances is it's protected because no one knows how to make it. Just because you can like test food to see what the recipe is doesn't mean that you know all the interworkings without it being a trade secret. Because sometimes there's some things you don't know in the process of making the food or the actual product development that you might not be able to replicate if you don't know what the trade secret is. So that's why trade secrets touch its lifetime. It's, I think, the most expansive form of copyright and intellectual property protection, because you just renew it every single year. As long as you renew it, it's protected. It's literally longer than any protection out there. It can go 200 years if you keep doing it and if the law allows it.
I mean, unfortunately, that is one. It's a lot of work to keep up with, which is why sometimes just general copyright is much more appealing. But if you are a large enough company with enough at stake, it's absolutely worth it.
Yeah. And one big secret that for years people don't know, the Coca-Cola formula. What is actually used in the formula to make the Coca-Cola? It's not publicly known. And when they switched over, it was a public uproar because they wanted to go back to the original. So classic Coca-Cola was how they did it. But at the time, they just wanted the regular formula. So that's why classic went back and not actually have Coke.
Well, yeah. I think also they had to change it because, you know, the times came. So the original Coca-Cola like recipe, it's something that you're not going to find anywhere. The OG one, you're not going to find anywhere.
Yeah. And they still use that. And they still have the, like, what, the 80s or 90s version on the market, but it's not as, like, big now. You can still buy it, but the original formula is mostly in most Coke products because it's a drink. If the public knew how to make it, then there's no point to sell your drink if it's not protected.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In most drink companies and food companies, if they have a signature recipe, that is highly protected for their bread and butter. If everyone can make the cinnamon bun, they wouldn't have the business that they have.
And this is why I say trade secret, or like the full lockdown on intellectual property protection, because no one knows how to do it. And you can keep applying that protection as long as you keep up with it. But one thing about, these protections that we just talked about is you have to keep doing the practice of protecting it, to file for it, to say, okay, I want to keep this on record. I want to keep this established. You do this every year as a way to maybe update or give more information to the Copyright Office. I think it's the Copyright Office in the United States is the Library of Congress. You file a patent or a copyright, you do it to them.
Yes.
And different organizations and countries have different ways they apply for copyright. Most of the time it's handled by the government, and they have databases of the copyright at hand that's available to the public and available to international.
Did it?
Yes. You can actually look up different copyrights that people have for different products, and actually know that that idea is protected. That's how, you know, copyright infringement gets to be upheld, because those known copyright for things out there, and all have like a, some of them have an ISBN number as well.
Well, you know, yeah, that makes total sense. Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, that is intellectual property protection. But two things we're going to briefly talk about now, back to copyright. One is public domain and one is fair use. Keep it simple. Public domain is when copyright expires after the specified time in which it ends. So the 75 years after the death is usually when something becomes public domain. And public domain is, you can basically use it and don't have to give any Creative Commons or crediting to the copyright holder, because it's no longer copyrighted. And it no longer can be copyrighted.
Again, that's how you get those kind of like music libraries. Of course, some stuff is random generated or smaller artists, but you can find some really big and popular songs that may be from, you know, the 40s or the 30s or something like that, that 20, 30 years ago, you wouldn't be able to be used anywhere and all the time, or you would have to send an official like request to use it. So, make it 70 years of care.
And one thing about public domain that you can access, internetarchive.com, that's an organization that takes different public domain intellectual properties, put it on the site where you'd be able to access it for either research material, getting answers to questions, or even just having it as a public library, as an archive system. Archiving is really important because it preserves the old intellectual property that is in the realm of public domain. If you say that archiving is boring, well, archiving basically preserves anything that had music, video, writing, photograph that now don't have any binding in law, but you can still preserve it for the public to access and see it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I will still push back and say that, yes, it can be boring. If you're not interested in the process of archiving, it absolutely can be boring. It can take a while, and it's also being meticulous with it, because you have to be able to find stuff. If you use keywords or however you want to track stuff down, whatever system you have to uphold it for everything you add in there.
Yeah. I actually did an episode of the importance of archiving. So, you know, when that gets uploaded, you'll be able to know what archiving is all about and why it's so important. But one example of public domain that we see a lot of is Disney. Disney was a company created on public domain. Most of the movies that they had made from the, you know, the 30s, 40s, and 50s were predominantly public domain properties. These include like Snow White, Cinderella, different versions of the Grimm Tales, you know, Mulan. There's different, Joan's Arc is also public domain. Anything that had like history precedents or anything, you can literally create it in public domain and don't have to give it to them. Now, when these films get made into public domain properties, they'll actually be protected as a new version of that public domain, and they can be copyrighted. It's a little weird.
I mean, again, if it's an adaptation or things have been added to it, they can definitely copyright it. I mean, it's hard because, like, when you think of the original definition of copywriting, where it states, like, common knowledge or, again, stuff that can be easily taught and spread to people, it's really hard to say that you can copyright that, because it's either children's fables from across the world and everyone kind of knows them and they're going to also pass them down. People aren't going to pay Disney directly. But if they change it and they make their own like unique characters to them or add different stuff, they add music to it, then I can absolutely see them saying, now this is our property. This version of Alice in Wonderland is our property. But they found a way also you just kind of have ownership.
But you can make your own and they can't do nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What kind of inspired this entire conversation was Disney, Mickey Mouse, Willie Steamboat version was going to public domain in 2024. So that kind of what sparked this copyright intellectual property protection babble, which I think is interesting, but Mickey Mouse can be protected with a trademark, so that's totally different. But that version can be protected. depending on how they do it.
Yeah, they're able to, I don't know, there's been like quite a few versions of Mickey Mouse. So depending on which one they decide to go with, I'm pretty sure they'll be able to pull it off.
Here's the problem. When a company tries to use a trademark as a way to protect copyright, it gets into the issue of abusing copyright privileges. When companies tend to do that, the courts can either decide that they are in legal gain to do that, or they are abusing the protections of copyright to avoid public domain. See, they have to be very careful how they do it, because they can't do it to every single public domain that they have going into public domain. It has to be very selected few that they want to protect.
Mm-hmm. So, again, because for copyright, it's supposed to be basically until the lifetime of that specific person. But if it's a corporation and the corporation's still around, you can't count the corporation as a person, which is the hard bit.
No, but that character can still be public domain, and there's very few protections after that, after it expires.
Yeah. Well, they're just trying to keep it from being public domain for the most part, because, again, money. Money holds like a really big, the biggest weight when it comes to these lawsuits. They're countering on how much money they could potentially lose or are already losing.
Yeah, and if, for example, Disney wants to trademark every single public domain in their catalog, they'll be heavily fined by the government because of the fact they're abusing the right to use copyright when it no longer applies to that character or branding.
Yeah. I'm not saying that they won't ever try that because it's Disney.
Companies will try it and they will get fined and all this other stuff, but copyright law is something that's very expansive and has so many... That's the reason why it has its own dedicated lawyer base. The last thing we're going to talk about is fair use. Fair use is basically you can use copyrighted things, but you're changing the aspect of how you do it. The four factors that a court will decide on is the purpose, the character of your use, the nature of the copyrighted work, the amount and substantiability of the portion taken out, and the effect of the use on the potential market. The case that we're going to look at real quick is AI art lawsuit with Stable Diffusion with fair use. We're going to look at the four factors and see how this Stable Diffusion lawsuit can be fair use or can be copyright infringement. Stable Diffusion has an entire database of reconstructed art from images taken from the internet. Main people are filing for copyright infringement of the reconstructive works of the art. So basically, the original image had a reconstructed image, and the AI accesses the latent images entirely in the database. That's how the AI takes an algorithm. If you say dog with ice cream with blue hair, it's going to take everything with dog, blue hair, and ice cream and put it into an image, and it's using those latent images as the model for the reconstructed means of the image. One thing is clear, AI cannot hold copyright.
Yes. But the companies that they're drawing the pictures from is where the issues happen. If they're copyrighted photos that are being... So the thing about the AI-generated artwork, which we're seeing with this, the Getty Images lawsuit, but you also saw... Oh, I can't think of the name of the app. But there was an app that came out that blew up all over Facebook that created another big fight between AI art tools and all of that and AI art creation. Regular artists who have all different types of styles, because that app, you could pay, I think it was like $12.99, and submit a picture of yourself or a few pictures, and it would give you like 60 different art styles and images of you in these different variations of yourself. So for normal people, very cool. But when you look into it, it's because the AI system that was created just scoured the entire internet, took a bunch of artwork from artists, learned their art style, and then recreated it to make these new, like, depictions of people, which means that it took people's, again, their copyrighted art, their own artwork for their companies and all of that. And it, the most time these companies are doing these systems, they don't tell anyone. You don't get a notification that they've taken your art and copied it into this machine database. It just does it. So some artists are actually able to find their very keen and clear art style or creative style and say, that's mine. And it becomes this argument, which is what's happening with the Getty.
Yep. The four factors that we're going to look into: the purpose and character of the use. When AI uses reconstructing images to create a new image, the purpose is to create the art. The character is different than the original art, but the thing is, just because it's using all these different images, all these different orders of reconstructed, it still applies to art. So that where, you know, that comes into play. So the character of the use is you get a new image with the new styles. So the purpose and character might pass the first factor because of the how it's used. When you go down to the nature of the work is when it kind of gets kind of choppy, because you're not really taking the nature and putting it into a new image. I mean, you are, because you have different images within one new image. That's how that applies. But the portion taken out.
I think that ethically it's more upsetting, because at least when people have copyright battles, it's between other people or other companies.
Yes.
But because it's an AI generated machine, a lot of the people who create these machines, they're publishing these things and they're like, look what our AI system can do. Isn't this awesome? But if it came from them stealing a bunch of images, even if you kind of make a Frankenstein of them to get a general theme, you still took them from multiple copyrighted themes and just smashed them together. Rather than usually what I think we see in lawsuits where it is something that's copyrighted. Like if McDonald's has to sue someone who made a iteration of their restaurant or used their logo or something, it's normally very, very similar, and they normally just wrote, like, they took from McDonald's primarily and changed like 20%, if anything. But these AIs are taking 100 images to make one, but they're all, if they all come from the same source, that's where I could see the huge issue.
Well, the thing is, they're taking all these different images from various artists and they can put it into one image. None of these people are getting paid. Now, the portion taken out might be very small in when it applies to it. However, the portion taken out is still not given to the creator of that original image when this new image was based off of. I think the biggest argument for copyright infringement in this case is the effect of the potential market. It is affecting the market in such a great capacity in the art community that AI, when they make these new images, there is no copyright with that image, for the simple fact that that image is not really copyrightable, because it's, you know, all these, it's a derivative work. And derivative work is by the permission of the shareholder or the copyright holder that owns that image. I don't see it as transformative enough. I don't see the transformative nature of the AI art to the reconstructive means from the derivative work. I don't see a pathway for it being transformative, because it's not changing the original image. It's using the original image as a resource to gather data and make a new image.
Yes, but the issue is that in every other form of, you know, creationism in regards to creative and like intellectual property, like even for new songs that come out, if you sample something, you credit that you sampled it. If you write a paper, your sources, you cite them. And if you're gonna take 100 images of one creator's work to make an entirely new image, but you're using all of the elements from it, and you're just using one different source of it, which could be someone submitting a photo, or you just kind of make a conglomerate of like whatever they say, like a man with paint on his head. If that's all coming again from one source area, the fact that they don't cite it or give any credit, I can see that being frustrating, because the machine, again, can do these 60 images in like, what, 5 minutes, I think, at most. I don't know how long it takes for it to do it, but it is so quickly. Meanwhile, everywhere is getting these sources from, the amount of time, effort, and energy, and probably work that went into copywriting those, is all swept away just for the ease of it. So I can absolutely see there being a case where if you're going to take someone's work and not pay them, you can at least be like, and you know, if you like this style, and then like feature some of the artists underneath the photo and be like, check out these artists that helped inspire the style. Like at least that, at the bare minimum. If you do it that way, then you can open up a bridge for it. But just doing, like, taking their artwork, taking their images, creating something new, and saying like, oh no, it's a completely new image, when it's drawing all its sources from something else, you know, it's just, it's kind of, it does spit in the face of a creator to tell them like, nah, yeah, I stole from you, but is it really yours? if I just, you know, shift it around a little bit. So I think it's fair to say that the lawsuit makes complete sense, because also I think they removed their copyright on the photos, which Getty Images has on all of theirs.
And those two arguments here, there could be enough evidence to argue transformative use. There's also enough evidence to say that it's the derivative work and they did not have the permission from the copyright holder. However, the biggest issue with this case is the impact of AI in creative property and intellectual property. AI cannot hold copyright, nor does the company that made the image can do copyright, because this was created by AI. AI does not have the potential in current copyright law.
Company can make profit off of something that they're not even copywriting, but they drew all of the elements from someone else's published and copyrighted work. That is the discussion that needs to be had, because a lot of these companies, they're not just making AI generated software just for like fun. It's not just for giggles. Like, a lot of these companies are making money from it, or they're planning on selling this software to another company that can make money off of it. So it's absolutely fair for there to be a lawsuit in regards to what contains as transformative. But also, even if AI cannot claim copyright and the companies can't say it's copyright because it's coming from an AI-generated thing, and they're still able to sell the software and make a profit, that has to be a discussion, and there should be some type of compensation given for the, like, all the sources that they've taken from that are actually already copyrighted.
Yep. And the only monetization method for it is like similar to Spotify. When Spotify start licensing all the different music catalogs in the library, they're giving the copyright holders revenue from every time the music is played, and they get a royalty. That is the only way that these AI systems will be legal using work from other people. However, that gets into what images they can use and whatever intellectual property they have permission when they pay it. So when it dives down into it, they might have to take away certain images from the library because they do not have permission to use it, and the creator doesn't want to be paid for it. Basically, if this entire company hired people to make art for the latest images, they wouldn't have any copyright because they own the copyright to the images. But since they didn't do that, they shouldn't just pay people outright to make original work, and then they can sell the original work in their database to new images. So.
Yeah, but that would also be somewhat ethical and great fun in that. They don't care.
I know, but yeah, this concludes our episode with intellectual property, how to protect it, and also our two discussion points of public use and the fair use factorization and how courts, you know, determine fair use. I know this helps in understanding what copyright is, how does intellectual property needs to be protected, and how AI will probably be failing in the course of legality. If a court upholds this case, it's a big impact for the industry.
Yeah, we'll see. That will affect a lot of people, so I hope at least whatever choice they make is the right one for as many people involved as possible.
The only choice is to not make a precedent for AI creating intellectual property. Basically, the use of that intellectual property has to have permission and give money to the artist and the author of that property. That's the only way it's going to be successful. And then every image that is used in the new image or the new software or the new product mentions every single contributor to that program. And then therefore, you have to give their permission to use that new product from the AI into your product. But that's going to be the governments of the world giving laws to how to dictate AI, because AI is not going away.
Nope, it's here to stay.
Unfortunately. But thank you guys for being here, and hopefully it's entertaining and informative for you guys.
Absolutely. Right.
Yep. You can also find us on YouTube, www.mcmapodcast.com, at blogmcma on Patreon, and all social media and podcast directory. Bye, guys.
See you guys.
We'll be right back.
This concludes another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC Anime Podcast is available on podcast directories like Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. We also have our website at mcanimepodcast.com. If you want to directly support us, then follow Patreon blog MC Anime. Finally, if you want services for hire, then we're available on Fiverr for audio and video production, graphic design, idea consulting, and blog and article writing.